The Marketing Companion. Here are your hosts, Mark Schaefer and Tom Webster, sponsored by Voices Heard Media.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Marketing Companion. This is Mark Schaefer with my co-host, the highly developed yet accessible Tom Webster. Greetings, Tom. Oh, accessible one.
I am not so highly developed as you think, nor am I all that accessible, but always accessible to you, Mark Schaefer. How are you?
I couldn't be better. I'm feeling refreshed from a long weekend, trying to get back into the groove here, and eager to do some podcasting.
And you took some time off, yes?
Took a little time off, attended a family reunion. It's really the first time my whole family has been together since about 8 years. So it was quite an event, and I'm still recovering.
I'm alarmed that there are other Schaefers.
There's a passel of them.
A passel of Schaefers. Is that called a murder or what do you call a group of Schaefers?
Drunk.
A drunk of Schaefers.
Yeah, it's a drunk of Schaefers.
A drunk of Schaefers was spotted in Tennessee. So did you get any reading done on your little vacation?
I have. I've really been enjoying a couple of different books. Let me ask you something, because this is going to surprise you. This is a book I'm reading about an individual. Let me describe this individual, and you tell me who you think it is.
All right.
This is a person who is a famous entrepreneur, a true creative genius, and a visionary who drove his people very, very hard, created technology that disrupted an industry. Some people were incredibly driven to him, almost in a messianic way. Other people just hated him because he was so mean to people. He was so driven by quality that he would put quality ahead of everything, including relationships, profits, everything. Who do you think I'm talking about?
I'm going to say Henry Ford.
Oh, see, I thought you would have said Steve Jobs. But you knew there was a twist, so then you wouldn't have said Steve Jobs. So
no.
You countered my counter.
I countered your counter.
It's actually Walt Disney. I thought it would be fun to read a biography of Walt Disney. So I'll put a link in the blog post if people want to see what book it is. But so I've been reading it. It's a long book, but it's certainly fun because it talks about the happy, cartoony aspects. But it's also, I'm finding, an incredible lesson on entrepreneurship. And we don't typically think of the modern kind of entrepreneurial crazy startup stuff, back in the 20s. But if you read this book, it's almost like a Silicon Valley startup. The way they had to, fight for capital and fight for employees, and he pioneered new working models, new organizational models. It's a very, very interesting book. It's different than I expected.
Huh.
Yeah.
Another fascinating biography to read, actually, I think you'd enjoy this, is read a biography of Milton Hershey sometime.
I actually have that. I have that book. I spoke at a conference in that area like last year, and I haven't read it yet. So that's cool, huh? Milton Hershey?
Milton Hershey, yeah.
The chocolate guy.
Absolutely. The chocolate guy. Well, I believe he was human.
Yeah.
But he did make chocolate.
And he was really a philanthropist, right? I mean, he was a pretty good guy, if I remember.
Well, the town that he built around him,
yeah,
he was sort of judge, jury, everything in,
yeah,
that town.
Yeah.
Right? He built the schools. I mean, he was sort of apropos of our topic today, he was a potentate.
I am the potentate today.
You are the potentate.
So should explain. Maybe we should actually get into what we're going to talk about today.
You think? Yeah.
The topic is we thought, what if we were the king of Facebook? But rather than king, I'm going to be the potentate. And what are you going to be, Tom?
I am caliph.
You're the caliph of Facebook.
I am the caliph. Yes.
So if you were the caliph of Facebook, how would you fix what's going on now? And this was really prompted by the uproar created by this latest Facebook research, or at least the revelation of this research that really bothered people a lot. I wrote about it. Tom wrote about it in ways that basically said, you know, this was out of line. This was just not another A/B test. This was screwing with people's emotions. You know, I expressed concern that, hey, look, you know, if someone is already depressed and you make them feel even more depressed, I mean, how is that a way to run a business? So we're going to talk a little bit about today. Look, if we were running the show there at Facebook, what would we do? What would we change? And so, you know, Tom, let me just let you kick it off. One of the things I've been thinking about is the way that the economics of Facebook are being run right now. Is there any way Facebook can be financially successful, creating a good return for their shareholders without constantly pissing people off?
Well, they certainly know enough about us. I mean, they have enough information to serve us targeted ads and targeted offers and things like that without monkeying with us too much, right? So, I have to think that there's a market there. I mean, 60% of Americans 12 plus have an account on Facebook. Yeah. That's a pretty healthy advertising vehicle. So I have to think that they have to be that they can monetize that without constantly monkeying with this, you know, with the content that is frankly not their content, right? It's the content of our friends and family. That's what they're monkeying with.
Well, I disagree with you in a way, and this is the part I disagree with, is that the economic model of Facebook is built on collecting personal information about us and twisting it in a way to create ads, to offering this in a way to create more targeted ads. So to increase their profits over time, they have to do two things. They have to collect more information. So that's the part I kind of disagree with. I don't think they view that they have enough. I think they view they have to constantly find new ways, more ways to collect personal information about us, and then also find more ways to create ads and have people spend more time on Facebook so that they'll see more ads. And really, I mean, this emotional study, that's probably what that was geared at, is, look, if we can make people happier on Facebook where they spend more time on Facebook, if they spend more time on Facebook, they're going to see more ads. So to me, that's kind of the kernel here. It's the irritation, the burr under the saddle that just keeps, you know, getting more and more painful, is that they've got to collect more information about us. I mean, that's my view anyway.
Well, I don't know. They have a lot of information. I would argue that they do not use that information wisely or well. Mm. They have more information about us than any other advertising vehicle in the history of mankind, mm-hmm. besides Google.
Yeah.
Right. They have enough data. They have enough data. I don't think they need data that they don't have, mm-hmm. in order to make a lucrative ad platform. Mm-hmm. I don't think they need more. But I agree with you that they think they need more.
Yeah.
And I think that comes down to whether that's not having the right talent in place. I mean, one of the things that about this recent experiment that they did, it was run and designed by data scientists. And I don't know that data scientists have all the answers here, right? You know, the answer for data scientists is more data. Let's get some more data. Let's slice it. Let's dice it, or whatever. But you can have all the data in the world. If you don't have insight behind it, you're not going to be able to make the best use of it. And so, to me, the fact that this psychological experiment that they did was run by data scientists and not someone, say, more qualified to do it, who would know right off the bat that it would be an unethical study, tells me that they aren't really optimizing what they already have.
So, Mr. Khalif of Facebook, So what is your first ruling here? It sounds like it has something to do with they need to have a staff that's creating more insight from the data that they have.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I talk a lot in my day job and with clients about big data, and big data is not a panacea, right? Big data doesn't tell you much of anything, and I think there's no shortage of data. Mm-hmm. Nobody has more data than Facebook and Google, mm-hmm. But you would think that they could do a better job of giving me targeted offers and targeted ads and things like that than they do. They have enough information to do it. I get better targeted ads when I'm watching a television program that I really enjoy sometimes, right? If I'm watching something on the Sci-Fi channel, I am just as likely to see something that appeals to me in a television spot as I am on my Facebook wall, basically, because there's a lot of crap on there, right? Mm-hmm. So I think they need more humans. I think they need more humans that are educating advertisers, that are helping them target better. Mm-hmm. It is self-serve, but that doesn't mean that self-serve is the best thing, right? Self-serve is saves them money and keeps their, I suppose it's good from an HR perspective, but, you know, look at the ads you get served on Facebook. There's a lot of crap there.
Well, I mean, it's not completely self-serve. I mean, for the bigger companies, they've got, you know, people helping them and so forth. But you are getting at, you know, one of the second issues about, I mean, to me, there's like these two trains just heading toward each other. And one is this creepiness about collecting more and more personal information. And where is that going to lead? Where is that going to leak over time? Mm-hmm. Then the other train is that the level of the content, the quality of the content is going down in some ways, because if you think they're driving us into this paid model, not just businesses, but eventually I think even individuals, where there's just so much stuff that is getting into our feed, Facebook has to ratchet it down. And so it's not going to be the quality of the content that reaches our feed necessarily. It's going to also be content that is coming from the highest bidder. And it's a little bit of the, you know, tones of the content shock thing that I wrote about in January, where there's just so much stuff. The content that's going to get through is going to come from the companies with the biggest pocketbooks. So it seems like, it's like, wow. You know, what do you do in this scenario? This is a really weird economic model where, by definition, they've got to collect and share personal information over time. You know, the quality of the content, I think, is going to be jeopardized. It's going to become more spammy, even from our friends. I can see a day when we're not really being necessarily rewarded for quality all the time. So, you know, it's like, this is hard. I mean, the whole economic model, the two big pillars here are, you know, they're kind of getting ready to crumble in a way.
You know, the one thing that it continues to astound me is that, you know, the other shoe on privacy never seems to drop.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't seem to drop on Foursquare.
Yeah.
I mean, someone even made a site that you know, I rob you or something like that.
Please, please let me rob you.
Please let me rob you. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, that and things happen all the time. Right. Like, something just happened with Airbnb, where the owner of an Airbnb home or whatever, mm-hmm. came and barged in on the couple that were staying there, drunk and unwelcome, and you know, those things happen, but they don't seem to bother people long term.
Yeah, I mean,
that yeah. continues to astound
That's
me.
That's one of the major big questions I get in my classes is, you know, when is there going to be a backlash? And my question is, why hasn't there already been a backlash? That's the real question. And I think that answers the first question. So the question remains is what, you know, what would you do if you were Facebook? And one of the ideas I put out there a few years ago, and I guess they must have run the numbers, and it must not make sense for some reason, but I've wondered, why don't they offer a premium version that's ad-free, where you would have more control over your settings, and it would be ad-free? I mean, for someone like me who's never going to click on a Facebook ad, you know, if they said, look, $29 a year or something like that, you get this premium version, it seems like that would be a recurring passive revenue model that could, you know, bring in a lot of cash. But the only thing I can think of, Tom, is they've run the numbers and they want to be able to show advertisers what the potential reach is. And if they start minimizing that reach, then, you know, somehow it hurts their advertising dollars. I mean, they must be looking at this, but it just seems like an obvious revenue source that would actually fix some of their problems. I think it would make Facebook more popular.
Well, one thing that I think they should do is I hope that they don't toss off this recent kerfuffle about the experiment they ran with our feeds, you know, giving us negative or positive information. Because one thing that I think is going to happen is that Europe is going to take this very seriously, right? I do a lot of work in Europe, and the data protection laws over there are far more stringent than they are over here.
I know. I wish we'd have them here.
I wish we had them too. And I think Facebook just violated a ton of them. And it's going to be, I think, from Europe that we start to see the first shots fired.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Facebook, I think, needs to get its ethical house in order a little bit. It collects all of this information. It has now made us even more painfully aware, as if we didn't already know it, that they are controlling the information that we see. And, you know, as someone responded to me on Facebook, appropriately enough, that, you know, this is a big deal. So it's free. Just go ahead and quit it. That, I think, completely understates the importance of Facebook to society, right? I mean, Facebook, again, 60% of Americans have a Facebook account. There is no TV or radio or print vehicle with that kind of reach, right? You're talking about an entire medium that has that kind of reach, not a single brand. And there are loads of laws governing television and radio for things like that. And there's nothing governing Facebook right now except their own internal ethics, which are questionable. So one thing that I think they need to do, you know, first of all, they need to have some kind of an ombudsman or some kind of ethical cop that they come. And this, by the way, this was an idea that my wife Tamsin had. I'll give her full credit for this, is that they need to start policing themselves before they get policed.
Oh, right. Sure. Well, I mean, look, I mean, any large company has internal controls. I mean, I think that's what this pointed out. There was a lead story in the Wall Street Journal. And let me tell you something, you know, for the people who are defending Facebook and their right to do whatever they want with their data, anytime you show up with an unflattering story in the Wall Street Journal, that's a signal that something's wrong. Whether you say this is an emotional response or a legitimate response, it doesn't matter. This is bad business. When you've, it's like, you know, 60 Minutes knocking on your door, and, you know, you could say, oh, well, you know, we were within the law or whatever. It doesn't matter. You're on 60 Minutes. So, I mean, I think this is really bad business. And, you know, you're bringing up a host of new ideas and new topics here around governance and you know, is there going to be government oversight and the corporate culture of Facebook? But I think the underlying idea here, I agree with you so much, is that there's a cultural issue here that, you know, you can't be a bunch of cowboys anymore. You can't run this like the Wild West. You're a public company, and there are expectations, there are regulations. And I think the higher thing to think about here is you can't breach the trust of your of your customers and the Facebook fans and users over and over and over again. You just can't run a company that way.
Well, you know, there's also, I mean, we're talking about how to fix them from a monetary standpoint as well, from a growth standpoint. Instituting their own rigorous ethical data controls, like setting a standard for the industry.
Yeah.
Right. If they come out and set a standard for the industry that says, look, your data is your data, and here is what we are prepared to do to prove that and to back it up, right?
Yep.
That is a strategic advantage.
I love that idea.
It is a strategic advantage
for
them.
I love that idea. They should be leading this.
They should be leading, but besides the fact that it's great for trust, it's good business for them. It's good business for them, and it would be good business for Google because they have so much more data than everybody else. Think about how in lean years, the American auto companies, and I'm thinking specifically here Ford and General Motors, when they were under brutal assault from Japanese car makers, they used a strategic advantage that they had, which was their vast cash reserves. Mm-hmm. And what some people saw as a cheap way to compete, which was just to give 0% financing, was actually a strategic advantage for them, right? No one could match that 0% financing. And so they were able to use their cash reserves as a strategic asset because they had more of it than everybody else. And they were able to ride out the Japanese onslaught. So what Facebook and Google have are those tremendous data reserves. And if they come out and they say, look, if Facebook comes out and says, this is what we are prepared to do to safeguard you and your data, a company that does not have that much data, does not have as much access to information, they have a choice to make, right? They can either agree to submit to those principles, which is going to severely restrict their ability to compete because they simply don't have as much data, or they can, in fact, submit to them or not submit to them and then suffer the wrath of the public. So it's such good business sense for Facebook to come out and say, look, here's what we are prepared to do with your data. We are prepared to give you the control over your feed, over your data, to take your data back. And, you know, that someone needs to establish that.
I love that. I think that's the only sustainable answer that there is. And what you're suggesting is that by creating this hurdle, creating this expectation and this standard for data security, that's making it hard for everybody else by leading. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Tom. I think that's it's a wonderful point. I mean, my view of Facebook right now is they only take a leadership role when they get caught. You know, when something goes wrong, then they say, oh, well, we're going to institute new standards. We're going to look at this in a new way. I mean, that's not leadership. I mean, my view is that it's the culture is kind of out of control there. So I think that's really a fantastic point.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, even if they just gave us the option to have more control over our data, most people are not going to exercise those options, right? I mean, if you say, all right, you can tick all these boxes here and we can't do this, that, and the other thing, most people are not going to tick those boxes, right? Mm-hmm. I would be happy if I could just get my feed presented to me in reverse chronological order.
right.
Without any monkeying whatsoever, because it is it's vaguely paternalistic to say that I can't curate my own feed, and so we're going to do that for you. I can curate it very easily by unfollowing people who send me crap all the time, mm-hmm. And most people won't do that. I would like the option to do that.
Well, let me twist the subject a different way here, as far as monetization again, I'm thinking about the drivers of Facebook, where if you can get the quality of the content better and you get to get people to spend more time on your site, what would you think about an option where you could get some sort of monetary reward if you create great content that makes people spend time with you? I mean, that's an option on YouTube, for example. I mean, if you create something that goes viral, you can have you have the opportunity to get advertising revenue. Mm-hmm. Would it be in something for Facebook to think about where if you create something, some content that's consistently good, that's you know, A, driving eyeballs to Facebook, and B, getting people to spend more time on Facebook, wouldn't that drive the right behaviors, or is there something I'm missing there?
Well, there's a couple things they could do. I think, you know, you mentioned YouTube, which already does a great job of that. Mm-hmm. The next logical step for Facebook is Instagram. If there were some way to monetize content creators on Instagram and reward them for getting their Instagram photos shared widely in a manner similar to YouTube, mm-hmm. then I think that, you know, that would be an interesting place to experiment
even if you had a program that was like badges, like Foursquare. I mean, people love that stuff. Mm. People love that even more than money sometimes. It's you know, not me. I love money.
I like money.
I choose cash and friendly fingers every time. But some people love, you know, what if you were the mayor of Instagram? I mean, what if you could win, if you had certain levels or badges on Instagram or Facebook where, you know, you are a certified whatever, level 2 content creator. I don't know. It'd have to be something sexier than that, I guess. But don't you think that would drive the right behaviors that would benefit everybody? People would have more fun. They'd spend more time creating content. You got better content. People love being on Facebook more. And that seems like it would be something simple to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are some brands that are already doing a very good job of this and, you know, empowering the rest of us to get some kind of at least satisfaction from it would be wonderful. You take a brand like I Effing Love Science.
Yeah.
And you can replace effing with the Anglo-Saxon fornication verb of your choice. But
freaking.
I freaking love science. Yeah. Like that's a brand. That's a company mm-hmm. that sells access to people who like and share their content. They have attracted a group of people who like and share their content, and they sell access to those people, right? It's a very fascinating case study, that particular company.
Yeah.
And it's all because they create and share compelling content, right? And so being rewarded for creating and sharing compelling content that keeps people, that's a positive reward. I think that's rewarding the right behaviors for Facebook, I think, as opposed to negative rewards or continually manipulating what we see or even how we feel.
Well, I have to look into that a little bit more. That is a very, very interesting model. I mean, I think I don't know if that would be scalable to the size and scope of Facebook. But it's very interesting. Another thing I've been thinking about is I was thinking about Dell. Dell took the company private, and I actually attended a Dell conference a few months ago, and I went into this conference slightly negative about Dell and came out of this more positive because I see that taking the company private will help them drive the right behaviors, not necessarily what Wall Street expects. Mm. And so I was thinking about, I mean, all along, I mean, a month before Facebook went public, I wrote a blog post called something like Why Facebook Will Be the Most Dangerous Company on Earth. And it was this idea that once they have to make more money every quarter without end, without exception, forever, they're going to be driven into doing more radical things with our data. They've got to find more creative, bold, and risky ways to use this, as you've so well described, their biggest asset, our data, or you know, the data they have about us. And so I'm thinking, gosh, you know, would another strategy over time, what if you took the company private again? You know, what if Zuckerberg took his wealth and said, "All right, I'm going to start buying back shares because you know we have to do this our way." I mean, it's a radical concept. It's probably years and years away, but I'm just trying to literally think about if I were running the show over there, how do I align shareholder value, creating this shareholder value with serving people in an ethical way, in a way that engenders trust and loyalty and even love for the platform, and still create good profitability.
Well, I want to leave you with a question, and I have not been able to successfully answer this question in my own head yet. But you know, as you know, we both wrote about Facebook's, I think, ethical lapse in this study. I think the study was unethical, mm-hmm. which is the distinction I would like to make here. The study was an unethical study. I had people comment, well, just quit. You know, just quit Facebook. It's mm-hmm. free. There's nothing binding you to it. And so I grappled with this question over the weekend. I thought about it. Could I quit Facebook? What would I need to do to quit Facebook? Mm-hmm. Could I deal with the void that it would leave in my life? Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer to that. I feel like the answer should be, of course I could. And you know, the people that don't keep in contact with me are just weak ties. But we all need weak ties, right? When we walk into an elevator, we make small talk with people. We need weak ties as well as strong ties. And I don't know. I mean, could you quit Facebook tomorrow?
I think it's an interesting point, Tom. Personally, I think I could. Professionally, obviously not. I mean, I'm in the marketing business. I think it would be foolish for me to turn my back on Facebook. You have to run your business with the way the world is, not the way the world, not the way you wish it would be. And Facebook is part of the way the world is. But I think an underlying point here is that one of the reasons Facebook can be so bold is because I think they know people are addicted to it. And even though they may rant and say, I'm going to quit, they don't. But it's a weird, weird business model. And I don't think it's a sustainable business model to base your profitability on, well, they don't have any place else to go.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, I have to tell you, this podcast has been more fun than a drunk of Schaefer's.
No, it wasn't.
But like all good things, even a drunk of Schaefer's, it must come to an end. And it should not come to an end without us acknowledging our wonderful sponsors at Voices Heard Media. Check out Voices Heard Media. They have got a lot of great tools for scaling social engagement and are doing some other very smart things. So do check them out. And I'll turn things back over now to the leader of the drunk of Schaefer's, Mark.
The potentate.
The caliph. I am the caliph.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. It just seems like we ran out of time. We had there's so much more, and I hope you'll continue the conversation, add to the ideas on this through your own social media presence through Facebook. We hope that you enjoy our podcast. We hope you share it with others. We appreciate you very much, and on behalf of Tom Webster, once again proving just how accessible he is, this is Mark Schaefer, and we'll see you next time.